Dear brothers and sisters, good morning. I've talked to you before about the Desert Fathers, who were those first monks who went out to live in the desert for God. And we know about them because we have collections of their sayings from people who went to see them and also stories about their lives. But there's one story in the lives of the Desert Fathers that is really profound and has nothing to do with monks, and yet somehow is still lodged in there. And it really struck me, really from the time I was 18, which is when I first read it. And this story, it's a true story. In the city, I believe, of Alexandria, which was like the New York City of its time, Alexandria in Egypt, huge metropolis, very cosmopolitan. A number of bishops were meeting. And they were meeting actually in the street. They were talking in the street about what was going on in their synod. And among them, the oldest and the holiest was known as Nonus. And as they're talking, the great actress Anna Pelagia comes down the street with her sycophants. And she was regarded as the most beautiful woman in the world. And like red carpet actresses today, she was hardly dressed modestly as she came down the street. And all the other bishops averted their eyes, and Nonus just watched her as she went down the street. And as she passed, the other bishops rebuked him, like, "Why did you watch?" And he said, "Did not her beauty delight you? I tell you honestly, her beauty greatly delighted me." And then he beat his breast and said, "This woman has put us to shame, for she makes herself beautiful for the eyes of men, whereas we do not make our souls beautiful for the eyes of God." And it turns out that Nonus was able to later convert Anna Pelagia, who herself became a hermitess and a saint. Dear brothers and sisters, I tell you this story, true story, as we begin, we're going to talk about two deadly sins this weekend, and as we start talking about lust. And the reason I say that story to talk about lust is because it makes it very clear, at least it did to me, that just like gluttony, the evil of gluttony is not in the food, but in the eater, the evil of lust is not in the body, but in the beholder. And we see Jesus today in the gospel, in fact, radiate glory from his body. His body is beautiful. It is radiant. And his disciples are blown away. And St. Paul tells us in the second reading that we'll be transformed to be like him. Because God made us to be beautiful, in fact. Behold. Okay. And yet so many times when people struggle with lust, they put the blame in the person they see instead of the blame in their own heart. And dear brothers and sisters, this really struck me as a young man, first by reading that story, but then secondly by living at seminary. And, you know, seminary is a rather cloistered environment. And we were all, I'm talking about St. Ben's now, we were all young college guys. And when a girl would come on campus, half the guys would flee to their room. And it occurred to me then, I mean, I understand we're young men, we were struggling with all kinds of temptations, but it occurred to me then that if what we were taught was accurate, which is that the evil of lust, the sin of lust, is treating a person like an object, taking someone who is in the image and likeness of God and treating them as an object of gratification, depersonalizing them, dehumanizing them, that it did not seem to me less objectifying to treat a person as an object of temptation than to treat them as an object of gratification. you're still not seeing the person. And that was the difference between Nonnus and the other bishops. They didn't want to treat Anna Pelagia as an object of gratification, but they still refused to treat her like a person. They just treated her like a devil walking down the street. Nonnus alone truly saw her, and therefore he was able to convert her. And so, dear brothers and sisters, the reason I bring this up first is because as we talk about lust, and lust is a terrible sin, it is, of course, one of the seven capital sins. It means it breeds all kinds of other sins. It is a root of sin. It is a kind of sin that we'll be struggling with as long as we're alive. Old age doesn't automatically fix it, like so many people seem to think. It is something that will be with us as long as we're in this body. And it leads to numerous mortal sins. Right? Every act of impurity is a mortal sin, a grave sin at least, and if you do it deliberately, a mortal sin. The reality there, dear brothers and sisters, is horrifying. And also, we live in a society that seems completely dedicated to gratifying that one sin. There are other societies that have lived for other sins in the past. Ours seems to live for lust. So I'm not in any way, shape, or form undermining or minimizing how great the sin of lust is, by no means. It comes to me with some horror, it should come to you with some horror too, when I looked it up, and of course statistics on this are a little shady, but pornography brings in around $100 billion a year, which is the same as the U.S. government spends on the Department of Education. Horrifying how much is out there. And we also know, neurologists and psychologists tell us that, like pornography on your phone, that when you start looking at that, and a lot of people start looking at that when they're like 12, it is more addictive than heroin. What it actually does to your brain is more addictive than heroin. So it is something we have to fight. We have to fight tooth and nail. We have to fight with everything that is within us. We have to fight it hard, not minimizing that at all. We just have to fight right. You know, there's this idea that people have that if I keep on shifting the blame to everyone around me, to society, to what I see on my phone, to the way people dress, that, you know, then lust will magically be fixed. It's in the heart, man. It's not in what you see outside. There's a reason the church doesn't promote burqas. And the reality is that even a society that does promote burqas, people still struggle with lust. They're like, oh, I saw her ankle. It's true. That's real. Even if everybody dressed in tablecloths, if our hearts remained unchanged, we would never conquer this sin. Because lust is found not in the attractiveness of bodies, but in the twisting of the heart. And it must be fought there. And we know that love still finds people attractive. And I assume not in gross ways. Like when grandmas see their grandsons dress up for prom and they're like, oh, he's such a handsome boy. I assume that's not gross. And yet I assume they're still honest. There is a way to see the beauty of people, to see the reality of people, without it being twisted. Did not her beauty delight you? A chaste heart can see beauty and not objectify it. Now, I don't want you playing around with that line because it's easy to justify to ourselves. But to give you an example, which I hope will help you see the difference between lust and appreciation, I'm gonna put it out there in something that you can see, hopefully. It's the difference, and hopefully you've seen this, at least the first one in your life, it's the difference between art and porn. If you go to an art museum and you see a portrait of a woman or a man, they're beautiful. Even if you wouldn't have thought them so on the street. What's the difference between that and pornography? Art enhances someone's humanity, dignifies it, cherishes it, celebrates it. So that in a good painting, almost like what we see in the Transfiguration, who they are leaps from them. Their dignity, their humanity leaps from them. Whereas porn is dehumanizing. And of course, treating people like less than human is not dependent on how they dress. It's dependent on the heart. Which is not to say that modesty is not a real thing. Obviously, nobody should be dressing up to try and tempt other people to lust. That's clear. I'm not denying that either. I'm just saying we make so many excuses when the battle is in here. And Lord knows, one day we'll see everyone risen from the dead, and everyone will be beautiful, and we won't be able to go run to our rooms then. The second sin I want to talk about this weekend is sloth. And I want to be very clear about what sloth is, because a lot of people think that sloth is just laziness, and that's not true. Sloth is a laziness when it comes to the things of God. It's a lack of diligence, a lack of love, an apathy when it comes to the things of God. I know many, many, many people who are not lazy at all, who are still completely trapped by the sin of sloth. And so let's talk about that. Let's use the image today. Jesus takes Peter, John, and James up the mountain with him to pray. Now, the other disciples weren't invited, but I did think that what a wonderful example it is, that, or symbol it is, of how many of Jesus' disciples refused to climb the mountain to be with him. Because the reality is, dear brothers and sisters, it takes effort to practice the moral life. It takes energy and sacrifice to practice the moral life. We have to sacrifice some of our convenience, some of our ease. And that's not all we have to sacrifice. I'll get to the second part later. When I go on pilgrimage, as you know, I'm from a place that is flat. Okay? As God designed. When I go on pilgrimage, for whatever reason, they put those stupid saints' churches on top of mountains. Or hills, or like 10-foot overpasses. It doesn't matter. And I look at that, I'm like, my fat butt's not going to climb that. I don't want to get up there. I'm going to die. Right? And then I was like, no, I came to see the saint. And so I forced myself to climb the stupid mountain. And then when I get up there, and after they've used the paddles to bring me back, you know, I go and I venerate the saint. But I always think about what a great image that is for me to remember that, yeah, following Christ involves effort, it involves sweat, and how many times do I excuse myself from doing it because I like to just stay at the base of the mountain. There is one great mortal sin of sloth that roughly 70% of Catholics commit. Not coming to Mass on Sunday. It's not like you even have to climb a mountain to get here. They just can't be bothered. I used to say this in a parish that really struggled with the sin of sloth. I'm not going to say where. But I would remind them all the time that not loving the things you should love is just as much a sin as hating the things you should love. Apathy, boredom, not caring about the things of God is just as real a sin as hating the things of God. Now, I know lots and lots of people who are not lazy, and yet they're still tied up in sloth. So what do I mean by this? It's an apathy about the things of God, not just an apathy about things. And as St. Paul says today in our second reading, he warns us, their minds are occupied with earthly things. You can be very busy and never have time for God. Do not raise your hands on this next one. You do not want to raise your hands on this. Be very clear that you should not raise your hands on this or else God will judge you. But when I invite you to things like pilgrimage or Bible class or, you know, days of St. Joseph or anything like that, how many of you say in your heart, I'd love to come, but I'm just too busy, too tired, too stressed? How many of us give all our time and energy to things that have nothing to do with God? Which is why we were created, to serve Him. Can you imagine if your boss came into your office and said, look, I'd like you to file some papers for me. You're like, look, man, I am on level 1,789 of Candy Crush, and I'm just so tired. I just can't do that. I'm really occupied right now. Your boss would be a little upset with you. I once served in a parish where baseball was so clearly their God instead of Jesus Christ that for the entirety of Little League season, the church was half empty. But we're busy. We have all these tournaments. None of them were lazy. All of them were apathetic when it came to the things of God. And that's the sin of sloth. That's the sin of sloth. Just not caring enough to make an effort for God. There's one more thing that I want to say, dear brothers and sisters, based on the gospel today. It's something that St. John of the Cross teaches us. It's important. I knew I needed to say it at some point, and I think the gospel gives us an insight today. We don't really know what was in Peter's mind when he said to Jesus, let's build three tents here. Right? Jesus clearly ignores him. But what spiritual writers say is that it seems like maybe Peter enjoyed this experience so much. I mean, God speaking, he sees the saints, Jesus is radiating. It's a whole lot better than fighting with the Pharisees. He's enjoying this experience so much. Let's just stay here, man. Can we just chill here for a while? Please. And St. John of the Cross points out that these seven capital sins don't go away when we get holier. They just metastasize. And they become a cancer on the spiritual life. So that gluttony no longer becomes an addiction to food, it becomes an addiction to pleasure and prayer. Oh, I need to hear my favorite worship song. Oh, I need to listen to my favorite preacher. Oh, I need to go to my favorite retreat so that I can have that pleasure. That lust is no longer a matter of objectifying people, it's a matter of objectifying God, because we're like, give me visions, give me insights, give me all these things that I can look at. And sloth becomes a matter not of praying because it's time to pray, but because I pray because I want to be titillated or entertained by the angels. Oh, it feels so good. Oh, it's so wonderful. I feel so much every time I go to the chapel. That's not spirituality. Can you imagine if you only talked to your best friend or your spouse when they entertained you? You would know that you were still using them. That's not spirituality. It's just the seven capital sins that are now wearing spiritual makeup. And that happens with all of them, just to give you one example. Is it really so different if I'm wrathful because somebody cuts me off in traffic, or if I'm wrathful because somebody's a heretic? It's still wrath. Even though the second one is nice and spiritual. And so, dear brothers and sisters, I want to remind you of the promise that I made you last weekend, as I see it again today. It is my job over these 4 weeks to make you absolutely miserable, and it seems like I have succeeded once again. So I'll pat myself on the back. Well, the reality here is to just recognize the patterns of sin at work in our lives. not to guilt ourselves, but to know ourselves. So that we can recognize our own self-deceptions and fight them in order to serve the one who is truth himself. God bless you all.